You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 97 of Take a Bow. I'm your host, Eli Tokash, and we have another great episode for you all this week. For any of you Neverland fans and listeners, we have one of my friends from Finding Neverland, Teal Wicks, joining the podcast. She's played Elphaba in Wicked. She was a Cher in The Cher Show, and she's done a bunch of other things, and we have such a great, great conversation, and I'm excited for you folks to listen to it, and it's going to be a really fun one. So before we get to that, before we turn it over to it, let's talk about some Broadway news, because there's been a lot that's happened since I last talked to you all last week. I don't even know where to begin. I guess I'll begin in saying happy opening to all of the shows that opened this week. Happy opening to Plaza Suite, and happy previews and happy first show to Mr. Saturday Night, Funny Girl, Birthday Candles, and Macbeth. And speaking of those shows, Funny Girl, I mentioned, just had their first preview since the last time I talked to you all, and I was actually able to see their third performance of Funny Girl. It was amazing. I thought the show itself was just fantastic. I knew nothing about the show going into it. I loved the fact that it was like show business within the show. I don't know. Those shows always kind of fascinate me. And just to see the life of like a showbiz star and all of that, it was just super fun. And Beanie Feldstein did a fantastic job. Jane Lynch really, really stuck out to me on stage. She really exceeded my expectations. I met her when she came backstage during Finding Neverland, but I never saw her like perform live. And I think that was the first time that I did so. And she was just fantastic. And of course, Ramin Karimloo was fantastic. Jared Grimes was fantastic. It was the first time I saw him perform live, and he blew me away. He had these incredible tap numbers, and he was able to sing and act like a true triple threat, and I was truly impressed with his performance. I would be shocked if those four aren't getting some sort of recognition for this award season or whatever it may be, but they were fantastic, and the choreography in the show was something that I didn't expect to be as good as it was, but everyone in the show was just fantastic, and it was a third preview, and there was already a swing and an understudy on, so that was awesome. So just incredible work, of course, as always, by swings and understudies, just making sure the show stays on track and is able to go out there and perform 8 shows a week. It's incredible. Blown away. And just congratulations to everyone in Funny Girl. Loved, loved, loved the show. Beanie Feldstein did amazing. She really definitely carried the show. I was a little, I guess, second guessing the choice. I was excited for it because, you know, she's a friend of the podcast. She's been on the podcast before, and she's just such a sweetheart. And I was very excited for her, but I was curious to see how it worked, and it worked tremendously. And I am excited to see her grow in the role and figure out, you know, I'm excited. And I'm excited to see her grow in the role, and I'm excited to see this show continue. I think it's going to have a long little run here on Broadway. It's a great show, and it's a lot of fun. But that block on 52nd Street is just fantastic with MJ and Funny Girl. It's iconic. I mean, really, it's just such a great little block featuring two of the hottest shows and best shows on Broadway right now. Other Broadway news. Ariana DeBose won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in a Movie. I'm so excited for her. I am dying to get her on the podcast. I need to talk to her about all of this amazing stuff, but she needs some time to wind down, and she's got some other press things to do. So we're going to get her on eventually. We're going to talk to her all about this, and her performance in West Side Story still amazes me. I love watching it on Disney Plus. Mike Feist and Andrew Garfield were still snubbed from the Oscars, but hey, I'll take it with Ariana DeBose win. I'm so proud of her. So exciting. Just threw me back to some Pippin days, seeing her up there again on a stage and just kind of reminiscing the day. I was trying to find some like old pictures of us to like post for like a good luck and send her and all these fun things. But it was really cool to look back on that stuff. So congrats, Ari. I'm so, so proud of you. And I can't wait to see what's next for her, because this is just the beginning. And in other news going on in the Broadway world, The Piano Lesson will be returning to Broadway next season, starring Samuel L. Jackson, Danielle Brooks, and John David Washington. I mean, do I need to say anything else? This seems amazing already. It is the first Broadway revival in over 30 years, so it's been a long time since we've seen the show on Broadway, so I'm excited to see it. I've never seen the show. I've never seen it on Broadway, obviously. So I'm excited. What an insane cast. Love Samuel L. Jackson. Love Danielle Brooks, I mean Queen. So it's going to be a good one, and I'm excited to go check that one out. It's joining next season, so it won't be here for a little bit, but it'll be here soon enough, and I'm excited to go see it anyway. So keep your eye out for that one. Piano Lesson, it's going to be pretty good. Oh, more exciting news. Nikki Renee Daniels played Bobby in Company yesterday. That's right. If you're listening to this on Thursday, the day that this came out, she is performing both shows on March 30th, Wednesday, as Bobby, the main character in Company. And it's the first time a Black performer will be playing the role of Bobby on Broadway. So congratulations to her. She's making history in the show. Very exciting times. Just a great, great story. Always with that company in, oh my God, with that company in Company. I was like, wait, I'm not saying that right, but I am. Amazing with that company in the show Company. So great stuff all around for Company. This is so silly, but yeah, I'm excited for her, and that's huge. It's a huge historic moment in the show that is so, so popular and well known in theater history. So congrats to you again, Nikki Renee Daniels. What else is going on here? Oh, bringing it sad for a moment. Aaron Tveit, Natalie Mendoza, Tam Matu, and Ricky Rojas, the current leads in Moulin Rouge, will be playing their final performances in Moulin Rouge. Yes, I know. It's so sad. Aaron Tveit is leaving the show. They haven't announced the replacements yet, and I can't imagine who they're going to be, but it'll be interesting to see who they will be. But you still have some time to go check out these wonderful performers. Obviously, so Aaron Tveit, Ricky Rojas, and Tam Matu have been with the show since it opened. And Natalie joined a little bit later. So it kind of like opened before the pandemic for a very short amount of time. And then Natalie joined post-pandemic. So they're all leaving together, and you have some time to catch them if you haven't caught them yet, as they will be playing their final performance in the show on May 8th. So you have about a month to go see, you have like a month and like a week or two to go see the current leads in Moulin Rouge with like most of the original cast in the show. And if not, I'm going to keep you posted on who's next in line for the show, because I'm sure that'll be, well, though it will be announced very shortly. So I'm so sad. I loved them. Aaron Tveit's performance was amazing. Ricky was amazing as well. I mean, just hilarious. Who knows? Maybe Julius will take over the role full time. I don't know. I'm spreading rumors. I'll stop. I'm sorry. Anyways, let's continue here. Oh, POTUS, the new Broadway show that's coming with Julianne Hough, Lily Cooper, Rachel Dreich, Vanessa Williams, so many stars. I mentioned it a couple weeks ago on the podcast, but they have changed their opening night date on Broadway. So they will be actually opening a week before their previously scheduled opening, and they will now be opening on April 27th so that they can be a part of this 2021-2022 season, so that they will be eligible for this year's Tony Awards, that they will be included in this kind of season of Broadway history, all of that fun stuff. They would have missed the cutoff if they didn't, so they moved up a week, and so we're going to get this fabulous show sooner rather than later. I mean, it's obviously only by a week, but like still, we're going to see the show sooner, and I'm excited for it. I don't know too much about it, but it looks amazing. And with those seven powerhouse women leading the way, I mean, can't go wrong, right? For the last piece of news, I wanted to share with you all on this Sunday, April 3rd, if you're in the area, if you live in New York and or you're visiting New York for this weekend, please stop by and come by the TKTS booth located on 47th Street and Broadway in Times Square this Sunday, because we will be sending a message of hope and solidarity for the people and families in Ukraine. Stop by and support us. You can sing along with us. You can come out and just meet a couple people. You can come by and watch. You can come, whatever you want to do. Just stop by and show your support and love, both for the Broadway community and for the Ukrainian families that this is dedicated to. So, but all that being said, I'm really excited for the rest of this week because I have a couple more shows that I'm going to see. And I'm obviously going to have more reviews for you on next week's episode. So stay tuned and come back next week if you enjoyed this week's episode. So with that being said, here is this week's episode with Broadway star and a good friend of mine, Teal Wicks. Teal Wicks, curtain up. Today, we have one of my favorite Broadway principals on the podcast. She is one of my old friends from Neverland, who has also been in three other Broadway shows, including Wicked, Cher, and Jekyll and Hyde. Everyone, welcome to Take a Bow, Teal Wicks.
Hello.
Hey. Oh my God. Hey. I'm so excited. Long time no see. So glad that we're able to catch up. This is so fun. I've been wanting to have you on the podcast for so long, and so I'm happy that we were able to do this.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Yes. I'm so happy to be here. It's so nice to see your face.
I know. It's weird that we're in this virtual space, but it's better than nothing, right?
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the way I usually like to start these episodes is kind of asking people, you know, how they got started and like what inspired them to join the theater and tell stories.
Mm. Yeah, love it.
Yeah. What was your experience?
I'll go. I grew up in Sacramento, California. Which, whatever, that doesn't really matter, but it was a good town to grow up because there's a lot of local arts. Mm-hmm. They have good, you know, good theater. They have a lot of like good small town, very, very basic kids theater. They have like Sacramento Music Circus and some other semi-professional theaters. And then a lot of the national tours will come through. So it's a really nice art city. And my parents really like just taking me to arts. They love anything from like outdoor concerts to, you know, the ballet to all the shows coming through to like the high school doing West Side Story, all that sort of stuff. So just from an early age, they just kind of took me to all these things. And it's so weird. At a very early age, I think I just understood, even if I didn't understand, but I had an appreciation. Oh my gosh. I had an appreciation for like live performance, whether it was a band or like just a street performer doing something on the street or in a theater. And I remember when I was little, the movie Annie.
Yeah.
When that came out, I was obsessed with it. You know, it's a bunch of kids singing and dancing and you're like, what? And as a kid, you're like, what are they doing? I want to be them. So that kind of just, I loved music and I loved that sort of theatricality. And then I saw the production, touring production of Peter Pan, which I think was starring Kathy Rigby at that time. I don't know. I forget how old I was, but I was still fairly young, maybe like 9 or 10 or something. And we went to see it. And I remember that being the first time being in a theater and watching a show and just being obsessed with it and thinking, I want to be up there. I want to get up on that stage. And I want to do that, like, you know, with people in the audience and there, and there's an orchestra and just the whole, everything about live theater, that moment was a huge moment for me and I just loved it. And that was at least the sparking my interest in it. And my parents, and I was always singing, and my grandmother was had been a choir teacher and a music teacher, and she played the piano. And from an early age, they were kind of like, oh, she actually doesn't sound bad for a kid. You know, there's some kids who sing and you're like, bless their hearts, but that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, and then there's ones where you're like, wow, you're actually singing in tune. And oh, wow, that actually is kind of pleasant to listen to. So I just would be singing whenever I wanted to. And I was kind of a shy kid, but anytime I would start singing or music came on, I would sort of come alive and be confident, and people would stop and listen and pay attention. And I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. How do I do this?
Right. Yeah.
And so they just, when I expressed interest in doing theater, whether it was at school or at the small regional things, my parents were like, yeah, go do. Yeah. Go do.
Oh.
And also when I was really little, when I was like a kid, I took ballet class and also gymnastics, and I was actually really good at ballet. So I started doing that for a while until I think I was like 11, and then I started playing soccer.
Oh.
And that was the end of my ballet
That's
career.
And then so did you do soccer and then you just like got back into theater at a later like date?
No, I did soccer and
you did
theater.
Both. Wow.
So I would found a way to do both. And you know, my parents would drive me around to all the things, and then when I had a car and had my license, I drove myself to all the things. And I did the plays at school and did a little bit of the regional theater, the small town. I never did like the fancy paying gigs in Sacramento. I did the most basic, you know, almost everybody who auditions gets in sort of shows, but I was in the world, you know, just being in the world of like what it means to go to rehearsal and
right.
be with a cast and in a company. And I was just obsessed. I just loved it. And when college time came around, I knew I wanted to study drama. I didn't know if I would actually be good at it, but I was like, at least I want to try.
Right.
And I went to UC Irvine in Southern California and just did drama there and sort of realized there that I actually was not bad.
Yeah.
And figured stuff out.
Wow.
And yeah. And UCI has they called it the New York Satellite Program, where each spring semester or quarter, we were on the quarter system, you had to audition to get into this program, and you would come to New York for like 6 weeks maybe. And we would stay here and we'd take classes. We had to like take dance classes. We had master classes through the school. We had to go on so many auditions and all of this sort of stuff. And I did it twice and I just fell in love with New York. And sort of that was when I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna move to New York. Like I love this city and I think I can actually do this.
Yeah.
And so when I graduated, I moved out here.
That's awesome.
And pursued my Broadway dreams.
So when you moved out here, did you have a job or were you just like coming out here to audition?
Oh no.
Oh, good.
I was just coming out here to live.
To live.
Just to live.
Oh my God.
Life. Be young.
And you haven't looked back.
City. Haven't looked back.
Look at you. Look at where you are today. Here you are, the star on Broadway that you are. That's amazing. So would you say like your first professional gig then, if you weren't doing like the crazy things at Sacramento, would you say that it was the tour of Jekyll and Hyde?
No, my first professional gig was a production of Pippin at Goodspeed
Opera
House. Oh,
of course. Oh, my God.
That then also did a mini tour.
Yes.
So that job was like, that job was my first time ever being paid as an actor. I got my equity card. Yay. I got my agents because they came to, the agents I'm still with, because they were representing a few people in the cast. And it was also my first tour.
Wow.
And so it was a lot of firsts, and it was a really, it was such an amazing company of people and just had the best time. And Pippin's just such a fun show.
I know. I had no,
as you know,
I had no idea that you were in Pippin, like that you've been in a production of it. And like, when I saw that you played Catherine, I was like, wait, I want to see that now. like why haven't you? I mean, go ahead.
That was like 2 decades ago, but yeah.
You could still do it.
I don't think there's any. Oh, yeah. I know. I could still do it. Yeah. I don't think there's any. I think it was so long ago that I don't think there's any footage that exists in the world.
Yeah.
So,
like VHS, if that's what it's called. No, I'm just kidding.
Rude.
No, I'm just kidding. No, it just, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe. Maybe we can do some digging, but that's hilarious. Yeah, Pippin, I was just like blown away when I saw that. Anyways, that's so fun. I have to ask you, for like people listening, you know, whether they're going through their first professional gig or whatever they're doing, and they don't have a manager, like, or an agent, like what is that process like? And like, is there, what are some of the difficulties, whether it's like with contract negotiations and just finding that audition and stuff like that? Like, how could you help them?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'm not going to be super helpful because I'm the, like, my start in this business was very much being in the right place at the right time and having the right person see me. And a lot of things just sort of just really lined up and very much just luck. Because I was going, you know, on all of the chorus calls and all of that. And, when I got Pippin, I didn't have representation yet, but it was my first job. So I didn't have any other jobs before then, which I had to negotiate contracts, and I would have been terrible because I'm honestly of the, like, I'm just happy to do it.
Right.
Oh my God. Yes. Thank you for wanting me. I'll do it for food. Just
right.
Feed me.
Yes.
You know? So I don't even remember. And luckily when I got Pippin, the casting director was very, very kind to me. I can't even remember who it was. I feel really bad. It's probably somebody who I still like see. Was very, very kind and was very much like, this, I know this is your first thing. This is normal. This is what it was. And it was, and I had a principal contract. So it was also kind of like a big deal. So it just, everything in that contract just seemed amazing.
Yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. This is amazing. But I would, if I had to give advice, because even though I have representation and they're amazing and all of that, you know, a lot of, we still have to sort of be aware of what we want to do and what we believe we are worth and all of that. And I would say it would be good to understand your finances, your financial life situation enough to know, what do I need to make? How much money do I need to make to be able to like still rent, pay rent and eat and travel expenses and all of that sort of stuff? You know, what's that sort of range? What's your baseline? So, you know, if some things, if there's an option to negotiate, you can probably try to be like, well, I need at least this, and you don't have to go crazy high or crazy or low ball yourself. But also you just sort of have to have, I think, a good idea of what you want to do. I mean, 'cause there's a lot of times that I'm sure you probably as well have, projects have sort of come up or auditions and you're like, I don't really actually love this role. I don't actually really love the show. I don't know about it, but I desperately need a job. Do I just say yes because I need something?
Right.
And you don't always have to say yes. I mean, there are times when where maybe you're like, I just need a job. So anything that pays me, I'll do it. But then there's also times that we can convince ourselves that we have to have a job, and any job we're just lucky to have. And it's true, but it's also, we are artistic human beings who have value and worth. And there are some things that may not actually be right. And we should have the courage to say, no, I don't think that's right, because it could be perfect for someone else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you gotta stay true to yourself and make sure that you're doing things that give you life,
yeah.
For lack of a better word, you know, whether it's just pure survival life or like artistic life or whatever. Yeah. And I just in my career, when I sort of realized the power of saying no to things, it really shifted a lot of stuff. Cause then I felt any project that I was doing or going after, I actually went after it with my whole heart rather than like begrudgingly.
Oh.
We are actuaries. In a world filled with unpredictability, we use our math skills to navigate uncertainty. Actuaries make a difference in people's lives across industries and the world. Actuaries have the freedom to work anywhere. And according to U.S. News & World Report, we're the 25th top-paying career. Make an impact as a fact seeker and a truth teller. Use your math skills for good as an actuary. The world needs you.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah. And I think that's an important like message, you know, like, because if you're not going to, if you can't go all in, then you probably shouldn't be doing it. Like you can't half-ass it, you know?
Yeah.
You have to go all in if you really want something. And that's when you put your best work forward. And that's when you put your best self forward to truly show your self-worth and everything like that. So that's really important for sure. Talk to me about Jekyll and Hyde, because I think it's really cool that, you know, you went on tour with it and then you went to Broadway with it.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Talk to me about that experience and talk to me about the shift from like tour to Broadway and like how it happened.
Right. Well, with Jekyll and Hyde, the plan for it was always do a tour and we're moving to Broadway. Like Broadway was always we're going to Broadway. It's just our Broadway run was a lot shorter than anyone had anticipated.
Right.
And we actually ended up going into a different theater. Mm. I think originally our Broadway plan was to go into the Richard Rogers, because this was, pre-Hamilton.
Yeah.
So that theater was available.
Always the thing.
but then when we were doing tour, the Marquee Theater, I guess, was available, like... it was only a couple weeks before the Richard Rogers one. And then our producers were like, we're going to go to the Marquee. And the Marquee, I mean, for anybody out there, I don't know how savvy or how much in the business people are or whatever, or know these theaters, but the Richard Rogers and the Marquee are very, very different theaters, very different amount of seats, very different stages, very different setup, very, very different. So that was just kind of, that was sort of the unknown, unexpected thing. And not to say that if we were in the Richard Rogers, we would have had a longer run of the show, but I think it just would have been a little bit, it's just, I think our show would have fit better in that theater.
I'm curious.
Anyways.
Like, if you already knew like you were going to go to Broadway and everything and like you're staging the show, like, are you like planning, even though you're going on tour right now, are you planning to like stage it for the Broadway theater?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty much our rehearsals and our tech was, because our set, the set and everything that was built for, it was built for Broadway, but then also then was going to go on tour.
Sure.
So it was, and I guess that made it so that we could fit into any theater that was open on Broadway, because we had to fit the show into all these different theaters across the US.
Right.
But yeah, and I think we had a little bit of, I think, pre-Broadway rehearsals, but it wasn't a lot. It was mostly just tech. It might have been like a week of rehearsals, refining things, maybe adding things that we couldn't quite do on tour because of just the logistics and technical sort of restraints of touring houses. You know, we changed a little choreography and, but I think more or less the set was the same. And oh, I got a new costume.
Yes.
I got a new dress, which was so nice. They were like, oh, you're getting a new dress for Broadway, an extra dress. I was like, oh, thank you. The Broadway.
That's amazing.
So it was minor. It wasn't like completely like rehauling the show. You know, sure. I think if we had rehearsals other than just like tech and previews, it was probably like a week, and then the sort of usual sort of week of tech, and then the preview process. And yeah I know, it was interesting though, like being on tour, because there were cities that they loved us, they loved that show, and then there were cities where they were like, what's happening? Why is he so upset?
Oh no. That's crazy. I know. I feel like that is one of those shows where it's just like, you either love it or you just like, you don't, it just goes over your head, you know?
Yeah, it totally is. And I think sometimes those shows are good. You know, I think it's good to have a show that has very strong opinions about it.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's a mix of good and bad, mm-hmm. rather than just bad. But you know, shows that are sort of like in the middle state, that people are like, yeah, I mean, it's good. They just you know, people forget about those shows eventually. They don't have longevity. And Jekyll and Hyde has, its fan base is hardcore. Like the Jekyll and Hyde fans are fans.
Yeah. For sure. And then the ones who are not, just like,
they are hard.
How dare you even bring that up in my presence? Like,
yeah, they're like, do not say.
It's hilarious. Don't
even speak those words.
Right. I love it. Well, so talk to me about like what it was. So you're on tour with it, and then, and you make your Broadway debut, and you're on a Broadway stage and you're performing. Like, what was that feeling to just like finally have like everything that you've been working for, like in college and everything? You're doing it. You made it to the stage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, because my Broadway debut was in Wicked.
Yeah.
So I'm here. I'm here to help.
Yes. That's even cooler that like your Broadway debut was in Wicked. But we'll get to that.
It was amazing. Because Wicked, I had done two California companies.
Right.
You know, I moved to New York. I always laugh because like I moved to New York, did the big move, left California to like pursue my Broadway dreams, and had, you know, a few great regional gigs and whatnot, which were super fun. But my big first big contract, big role was Elphaba, and then I was in California.
Right.
So I did it in California for almost 2 years, I guess. I did Los Angeles and San Francisco companies. And I had lots of ups and downs with it, just because it's a really hard role and I had never done anything like that. And I was like, oh, this is what it means to carry a show and to do a role like this. Okay.
Yeah.
It's tricky. And then when Broadway came, it was amazing because I was making my Broadway debut in, for one, Wicked, which is a huge, huge show, and the role of Elphaba, which is such an iconic, like superstar role. And I had already done it for a couple years, and I felt like I had really found who Elphaba was for me. Like, I really felt like I had made my own stamp on it. And the fact that Wicked asked me, you know, I had done it before, and they were like, we would love you to do it on Broadway. That just felt like such confirmation of the work that I had done with this role. And so when I went on Broadway, I went in feeling very confident and comfortable, which not a lot of people get, especially if their Broadway debut is like a new show and all of that sort of stuff. And you don't know if the audiences are going to like it or blah, 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 blah. So it was, you know, very much a sure thing. And I felt very, very confident. And the best, I remember my very first performance, because Elphaba has, you know, this great entrance. She comes basically upstage and just runs straight down center stage and literally stops and takes in this new world, this new adventure she's on. And I was like, this is, wow. I allowed myself a moment to actually stand there and absorb the fact that I was on Broadway, center stage on Broadway.
Right.
And a lot of times Elphaba gets entrance applause, and I had friends and family out in the audience too. So So, you know, you get entrance applause and I was like, oh my gosh, this is happening. This is really happening.
Right.
And then I was like, wait, you have to do your show. You have to actually do the show. You just started. So turn to the act, turn to your fellow castmates and act. Mm-hmm. So then I did. Yeah. So it was pretty, especially, it was pretty awesome.
Like, especially in a theater like the Gershwin, like that theater is like, it's huge, it's, you know, huge. Like looking out in that, I feel like would be so intimidating, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's hilarious that but like
felt,
that's what,
yeah, it felt
that's
so
your Broadway
good.
Welcome.
I know, it really was my Broadway welcome.
That's amazing. Ugh. What a cool story. Did you ever think your Broadway debut, you would be like covered in green?
No, I know. No.
I love
like,
it.
Do you even know what I look like, you guys? You know what I look like?
Oh my God. That's hilarious. I love it. I want to talk about all the makeup and all of that stuff. Like what was just like, that seems insane. How long did it take? Like, what was that even like? Did you like, I don't know, like, do your skin, does your skin break out? Like, I think that'd be, like, a lot.
Yeah, your skin goes through a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, they have built into the, like, I feel like, because there's a few people, because Bach has to be painted as the Tin Man, so.
Right.
So I think they all have, like, facials and whatnot built into contracts, because basically you have to, you're putting your skin through a lot.
Yeah.
It's weird, though, like, I can't speak for everybody. But for me, there was a point where my skin just got used to it. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing. Whatever. Oh. Okay, I can handle it. So thank you, skin, for being kind towards that. But they actually, so with Wicked, they have makeup artists. You know, it's usual. Everybody has the wig people. And I think there's the wig gal does Glinda and Elphaba, because Glinda goes on first, so they have time to get Glinda, and then comes to Elphaba, because like Elphaba doesn't enter until at like 10 minutes into the show, 15 minutes, I don't know, something like that. Mm-hmm. So basically, for me, I got at half hour, so I'd always have to get to the show earlier to do whatever I needed to do, whether I have to warm up or like, you know, stretch, do my roll out on the roller and do all those sort of things. And then at half hour, you have to get in the chair to start getting painted green. And the makeup artist is like, the makeup artists I have, they're amazing. They're such cool, wonderful, lovely people. We all just had the best time. They paint you green. It's your face. It's your neck. It's like your chest. It's like a little bit of your chest and then your hands and your forearms. Because Elphaba has a green, like kind of a sheer green bodysuit that goes underneath all the costumes. So that makes her arms green and like the rest of her chest kind of green. But they need the makeup to sort of transition. They can do the makeup actually pretty quick, I think, because they need to be able, if something happens and they have to throw an Elphaba on mid-show, I think they have the makeup down roughly. They can do it in like 5 minutes. I mean, it's, you know, just literally slapping it on and being like, don't look too close, people. But but yeah, I think they have to be able to do it like 5 minutes or less. But for Elphaba, I don't know, every makeup artist is sort of different, but it usually would be like 15, 20 minutes to get all green. And then because Elphaba starts out, the makeup over the green is fairly plain. And then at intermission, she gets glam because she's grown and all fancy. So she gets like more contour. She gets like lashes. She gets glamified, Elphaba. Yeah. And then,
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And then after a show, you basically take it all off. And everybody had their own thing. It was just easier to like jump in it because all the Elphaba dressing rooms, I had a shower. So you just jump in the shower and just wash it all off. And you can tell if anybody goes on tour and they go in a theater and the bathroom looks like it has like green in the grout, you know, Wicked has been there.
You know, oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah. I was going to ask you that. Like, I was like, are you finding like green, like on your phone, like on your everything, like the Neverland sparkles, like those escaped.
Neverland sparkles. I feel like sometime early in the beginning of the pandemic, I found all of a sudden Neverland little confetti thing was just on the ground. And I was like, what?
For sure.
Happened?
Yeah, those things stick to you. Yeah, I still find them.
Yeah.
I was curious, like, I feel like, I don't know, I obviously haven't done that, but I feel like the makeup and like Wicked would be like the same thing, you know?
It definitely, because I wear a lot of hats. I had some hats that had almost like a permanent little green tinge. But I don't know, I got really good at taking the green off, so it mostly come out. It was mostly like, yeah, like hats would just have a little, maybe like a green tint, because a lot of times the green would sometimes get stuck in your hairline. And sometimes you only want to scrub so hard because you're just going to do it again. Like, that's the thing for a two-show day. You have, because Elphaba gets glammed in Act 2, you have to start with a fresh, clean slate at the top of the next show on a two-show day. So you can't just like walk around green. You gotta take her off and then start all over again. But yeah, the green definitely like lingers. And I remember getting facials like months after I finished, maybe not months, but like a month after I finished Wicked or whatever, and still green would come out.
Yeah.
You would have to, if you were going to get facials, you had to tell the facialist what was going on, or they would be like, what's going on with your skin?
There's greens, there's like stuff green coming pores out of your pores.
You should have this checked out.
Yeah, that's amazing. There's no blackheads, it's just green.
Green heads.
That's hilarious. Oh. Oh god, that's so disgusting, but amazing. Only on a theater podcast would we be talking about this. That's hilarious. So I want to ask you, like, with Wicked, it's just, I mean, you said it, like, you're belting your face off, you know, you're doing all these insane things. Like, is there anything, it's physically, vocally, and emotionally challenging and, like, and demanding. So, like, would there be something that you did for Wicked to, like, warm up and, like, just a routine that you would have that you wouldn't necessarily have for, like, a show like Neverland, or for a show like something different?
Yeah.
Or even share, like,
yeah,
that, like that.
Yeah. With Elphaba, I found with Elphaba that I actually needed to rest a lot.
Yeah.
Like, know that sleep was my friend and water was my friend. And to not push myself, like, if my body was really tired, then my body was really tired, and maybe we weren't going to, you know, because as actors we're like, I mean, not all of us, but like, you know, sometimes we get really crazy about like, because you have to look after your body. And so you're like, sometimes it's, I got to work out. Or like, I got a massage. I got a yoga, whatever, everybody has their things. And I would really have to just pay attention to my body and be like, if I'm really tired, just like, no, you don't need to do any exercise today. But I would, I mean, before almost any show I do a little bit of a physical warm up. Maybe not in Neverland as much. Mary Berry didn't need to do a lot with her.
I love it.
But with almost any other show, I try to do a little bit of, like, I always do a vocal warm up, always, and. With Wicked, I had very specific ones that I found with my voice teacher. And I would always do a warm up in the shower, because I was lucky enough with all the Elphabas to have a shower attached to my dressing room. So I'd usually get to the theater super early, do a warm up with the shower running so I could like steam and do all of that. And then stretch, and the foam roller was my biggest friend with Elphaba. Yeah. 'Cause like my back would get really, really weird from the weight of the costumes. And also just, I decided at some point my Elphaba was very like kind of hunched shoulders, which is not healthy to like run around and do a show and try to sing with your like shoulders hunched. So it was a lot of trying to just get out those kinks and whatnot. So basically like sleep, rest, and a lot of water was my biggest, my savior with Elphaba. And also like vocal rest, like a lot of, I would wake up and I wouldn't speak, like my husband would go off to work and I'd basically be nonverbal with him and not really make sounds until like an hour or two after I woke up, depending on how tired I was the night before, just to give time for like everything else to wake up before I use the little cords.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's craziness. Did that come with time in the role and like learning that like through your body and like kind of examining that? Or was that something that like you just automatically did like when going into the role?
Oh, no, that was very much trial and error.
Interesting.
Because when I first,
I can't imagine.
When I first started with Elphaba, I didn't have a lot of discipline. Like I was,
right,
as annoying as this sounds, like I was blessed with vocal cords that could sing the show. But I had never done anything that demanding consistently. So I was just doing the stuff. I remember in LA, I used to drive to the theater and just sing along to the radio. And that was my vocal warm up. And then I realized that was actually not really healthy. Like trying to like sing along to Aretha Franklin and Janis Joplin before I'm about to go do Elphaba. No. Don't do that. Don't do that.
That's hilarious.
So it was a lot of trial and error. And just figuring out what worked and what didn't work. And sometimes, especially, you know, I made lots of mistakes and I learned from those.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, right? Especially like when you're like early on in the industry, like that was your Broadway debut. Like, it's different. Like, I feel like you, after Wicked, I'm sure you became self-aware and like really understood all of the stages that you had to go through in your next shows following that. So like, so it makes sense, the whole trial and error thing. And like, I'm sure that there's things that you even found during the Cher show, which was your most recently Broadway show, that you're like, oh, I never even realized that. Like, there's always, your body's always changing and you're always learning from it.
It's so true. Look at you, Ian. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
You
well,
know.
I'm learning.
little seasoned Broadway veteran.
Absolutely not. Let's talk about Neverland because I want to let you go soon. But yeah, I have to talk to you about Neverland because that's the show that we did together and it was just such a fun time. I want to share my favorite memory like later, but going from like a show, I mean, obviously Wicked wasn't your like, you didn't do Wicked and then Neverland like back to back, but like you kind of talked about how Wicked was, you kind of talked about how Wicked was so demanding and then Mary Berry, you know, you had some more time off stage. So like, was there an adjustment period of like, like what should I do off stage? Or like, what do you kind of like enjoy that and just being with the cast and just like being able to chill and not have to stress about your performance as much?
Yeah. Good question. Mary Berry is interesting just because in the beginning I had issues trying to figure her out. She was fun, but also she felt like one of the villains in the show.
Yeah.
And I've never really played like a straight up villain really. So I was like, okay, how do I wrap my brain around that? You know, and I'm sensitive and Teal goes through life being like, I just want everyone to like me. I just like everyone. I don't want the conflict. You know, like I'm so, let's just
And you're
be
so
nice
laid back.
And have fun. Yeah.
Yeah. She's so uptight.
So I was kind of like, okay, how do I do this? So it took me a while to be sort of at peace with what my role is, just in the show. And then eventually I was like, okay, that's fine. This is what we're doing. Luckily, like, I mean, we had such a great company of people. The cast was just like, oh, so amazing. And it took me a minute once we got into production to figure out what to do with my time. And so I would read, but I didn't want to read too much because it kind of takes me like out of the show. So I would just sort of like putz around and do stupid things. I don't even know what. But then there was one performance where I was upstairs and it was before my last big scene in Act Two, the Circus of Your Minds sequence. Yeah. And because I'm dressed, so I don't have to do a costume change. So I don't have a dresser coming in and being like, okay, we're going to do your costume change. And all of a sudden I was like on my phone doing something stupid. And then all of a sudden I heard a line that is past my cue line for when I usually go downstairs make my entrance. And then I start running down the stairs and then, you know, like four flights of stairs at the L'Enfantine Theater, in a crazy dress and heels, running downstairs. I slip, twist my ankle, hear like a pop and I'm like, oh, that didn't sound good, and basically hobble on stage and get seated just in time before the curtain goes up to reveal it's Tylee and I, like, sitting there, like, on a couch, supposed to be, like, you know, canoodling, mm-hmm. and Barry comes in. Anyways, and I make it out, and then I come off stage and was like, I think I did something bad. And I look down and my ankle is, like, crazy swollen, and I barely finished the show. Like, I didn't even do the bows because I couldn't walk. And I think, was it John, one of the carpenters at the show, basically, like, carried me out the stage door after the show so I can get in a cab. And I was out of the show for like a week because I sprained my ankle so bad.
I remember that.
Yeah. So after that, I stopped going upstairs. I stayed downstairs and just hung out off stage with the rest of the cast, which was honestly the best thing ever because we would have so much fun. We then would, like, play games. Like, Kara Lee would, you know, do like bananagrams. We had like a puzzle. Oh, yes. We would like color. Then it became, that was like the best thing ever. And I realized, I was like, I just can't leave the stage. Wow. I have to stay off stage. And then I stay in the world and I'm having more fun than being up in my dressing room all by myself. Right. Playing on my phone, like, doing things that don't necessarily bring me joy.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Right.
Yeah. So that was, that's
so
what I
fascinating.
Did.
Fascinating. Because I do, like, that's kind of what I was, like, trying to allude to. And now that you say that, I do remember, like, there was a time where just, like, randomly you started popping up. Like, you didn't always, like, pop up and, like, hang out. But, like, whether you literally, like, watched the show in the wings or you were literally in, like, the men's or the quick change room, like, on stage left or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there, you were always, like, popping around. And I was like, this is so interesting. Like, now she's doing this and, like, now she's always, like, here. And I love that. And it was so fun to, like, engage with you and everything like that. But I was like, now that you say that, I do remember there was a time where it just, like, wasn't like that. So that's fascinating that your ankle was kind of the root of that.
I know. And I was like, okay, that's the lesson. That was the lesson.
Yeah.
And then I also, I loved, and I tell this anytime I talk about Finding Neverland, of course, no matter what people think about the show, whether they absolutely loved it or they didn't, but no matter what, they always talk about the, you know, that the last bit with the play and the nursery and the glitter tornado and all of that. And that, and I mean, just as soon as they start doing the song and everybody's acting out Peter Pan in the nursery, I think it's some of the most beautiful theater. And I'm almost 100% sure that every single night I stood off stage and watched it just because I loved it so much.
Aww.
And I was basically the only cast member in the show that wasn't in that number. So,
right.
I mean, even the dog was in that song.
Even the dog. Well, you could have played the dog. Colin was originally supposed to play the dog. You should have played the dog.
I know.
We all could have been it.
We could all been it. I could have just been like a random like mermaid in like the background, just like waving.
Yes. Oh my god. That's
I just loved
hilarious.
It. So I would watch that off stage as well.
Yeah, there's so many things to love about that. Like, especially because like our set was just like so colorful as mm-hmm. is. So then like you add all of like the costumes and everything like that. And it's not like they were like flashy. They were all like simple things, but it was just it all came together and meshed so beautifully that, like, it made it what it was.
Oh,
it you know,
was so pretty.
It was so pretty.
Sweet and so. I just loved it. So
one of my favorite memories of like Neverland, especially with you, was the Broadway Baseball League, because we had a team and we teamed up with like Fiddler, I want to say. And it was just so funny because you need at least one girl to play in the league, and you were like, hey, you know, like, should I do it? Like, you kind of had that back and forth thing, and then you like finally did it, and it was Caroline, our wrangler, mm-hmm. and then it was like Laura, Haywood. Like, we had three girls, which is great. And like, usually like one or two of you would show up. And I think you literally played like the first game and then you were just like, okay, that, how do we do this b-ball? Like, you know, like you were like, how do we do this? What do you need me to do? Like, do you want me to catch? Do you want me to like play this? And they were like, we'll push you. We'll shove with love like we do on stage, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
It was so funny, and I don't know why, like, that's always been a memory that's, like, stuck of mine, of you, because I think I was just, like, so, I just love when people, like, in theater try to play sports, and, like, that's, like, one of my favorite things.
Well, like I said earlier, I played soccer. Like, I'm an athletic person, but I am not a good hand-eye coordination person, so, like, I can run. I remember, because I've done at least two Broadway softball leagues, with Jekyll and Hyde, and with Finding Neverland. Because I remember with Wicked was obviously my first Broadway show, and they were talking about how that team is very, very, like, they're very particular with who plays. Yeah. So I was like, well, I'm also, I probably shouldn't play anyways, but like, cool, good to know. Because I've never played softball. I'm not good at it. I wish I was good, but I am not good, just because the, my hand, it's no good, but I'm really fast. So on a few of the teams, I had been a pinch runner for someone.
Yes.
Because I was like, I can run real fast to that base. But yeah, so I'm athletic, just not with the, not with a baseball bat and a glove.
At least your story is, oh my God, I was running to a cue and not running to steal second base. You know, that you sprained your ankle.
Injuries. I remember. I remember one of the games, it was probably in Neverland when we were doing Neverland. Somebody threw the softball to the next base to get someone else and literally hit the person in the head who was running.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh. And was it with Finding Neverland? Or maybe it was when I did Jekyll and Hyde, but one of our, the doorman, one of the, like, the guy who ran the door, like, blew his knee out completely playing in the Broadway Softball League and then out for a while because he's just, I mean, injuries happen. It's, and people take it seriously. As you do. I mean, it's, we're competitive creatures, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Well, or else we wouldn't succeed in this crazy business.
Right.
But did you like it? Do you like softball? Like, are you?
I mean, like, I enjoy, like, playing it or whatever, but, like, watching it on TV or, like, even going to a game, like, with baseball, it's just too slow for me. Like, performers were just, like, so, what's next? Is it? We're, like, always going. We're, our brains are always, like, doing stuff and, like, it's just way too laid back for me, and I need something a little faster and more, like, keeping me engaged. I feel nowadays, too, it's so unfortunate, especially because of the pandemic. Like, our brains just, like, need constant stimulation.
Oh, I know.
Nowadays. And it's, like, not healthy, but, like, that's just the way it is. And baseball is not constant stimulation. So I think that also has something to do with it.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I hear you.
Yeah. Sorry, theater folks, for the sports talk, for the sports ball. The sports ball. But I want to get back and I want to talk about Cher, because that was a show that you did most recently. And, like, that is one of the shows, like, you played Cher. Like, come on. Like, that is one of the coolest things ever. I have to ask you, like, you played Cher and, like, you're working with Cher and she's watching you. Like, was there ever a time where it was just like, oh my God, like, the person I'm playing is, like, right there and she's, like, watching me?
Oh,
like, is that, like, nerve-wracking?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, talk to me about that.
Well, the first time that she came to see the show, it was when we were in Chicago doing the out of town tryout in Chicago, and we knew she was coming to see the show. We just didn't know exactly which show. Like, she was coming, you know, a certain weekend, and we're like, we don't know which show she's actually going to see. And then luckily nobody told me. It wasn't until basically Bows and I was off stage with Stephanie and Michaela, my other Cher's, and they're like, okay, we have something to tell you. And I was like, oh God, what? We're closing. Oh my God, what's happening?
Oh my God.
Going to Broadway. What is happening? And they're like, we didn't want to tell you before, but Cher actually just watched the show. And I was like, oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm like, well, thank you for not telling me before, because there's no way I would have been able to get through it. You know, I'm also the type of performer that I don't really like to know who's out in the audience. Like, some people want to know and I don't. I mean, I'll obviously know if I have, like, friends or family out there, but if there's, you know, fancy industry people, I don't want to know because I just want to just do my show.
Right. It really does impact your show. Yeah. Like, you try to, like, do, like, more, and that doesn't always help.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that with Neverland, and I got that to a point where I was just like, okay, if anyone's here, just stop. Just stop telling
me. Just don't tell me. You can tell me after the fact, and that's fine. You know, because I like to approach every show as if it has the potential to be one of my best shows ever, and, you know, or just because it can be great in so many different ways. Anyway, so yeah, so I was very, very, very grateful that they did not tell me. And then we all met her after the show. She like came, or maybe it was in between shows. I don't remember, but she came, we all like gathered as a company downstairs and she came in. And I remember when I saw her for the first time, seeing her in person, I was like, oh yeah, that's what she looks like. And then when she was talking to us, I was like, oh yeah, okay, yep, that's how she sounds. That's how I've been trying to, you know, figure out how she talks. And I was like, okay, I'm not, you know, super off track. I'm kind of in line with how she actually speaks and how she actually is when she's not, you know, not from, because all my other reference points were YouTube videos. Or anything. And so I was like, okay, cool. This is cool. And then the next show that I did, knowing that she was in the audience, I spent the whole show wondering if she actually, how she felt about the lines I was saying. You know, I was like, I wonder if she ever actually said that. I wonder if she's sitting there saying, like, I never said that to Sunny. I never said that.
Yeah.
That, you know, and all of that.
Right.
It was just weird. And it just it took me out of the show for sure. Because I was like, I wonder if she actually thinks that, she, you know, because I can't imagine watching somebody be you
on
stage literally. And being like, I don't do that. Or like, oh, do I actually do that? Is that what I do? And it was a hard time for Cher because it took her a while before she was comfortable with watching the show. She was just like, this is just too much. I didn't realize what it would be like to actually watch my life on stage. And even though she said yes to it and approved the script and all those things, you know, watching it is something different. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But yeah, it was a trip. And then, but as the journey went on, she would show up more and more, and she'd have like one-on-ones with us Shares. And like, there was a time when we were at the Neil Simon Theater, and we were doing the Broadway run in previews, and she like came up and like sat in my dressing room, and we like chit-chatted, and she like had her assistant pull up some like old Sonny and Cher comedy bits that she really liked. And she was like, see, like this one, she's like, I really like this joke. I kind of wish we had this joke in here instead. But it was like, okay, Cher, I can't do that. I can't change it. You're
right.
Cher. Like, if you want a different joke, you have to tell them.
Right.
But yeah, it was just interesting and seeing her. And also, as the journey went on, she would open herself up more to us. Like, the very first time we all met her, she had a hat, she had sunglasses on, she had a little bit more like leather jacket, a little more dressed up. The next time, the sunglasses were off. Like, she was wearing sunglasses inside the theater talking to
us.
Then she, like, the next time the sunglasses were off, the next time, like, the hat was gone, the next time her hair was, like, less done. She was in more casual clothes. Like, she slowly would, like, peel away her armor. And so I take that as a sign that she was getting comfortable with us.
That's really hopefully. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, talk to me about the show itself and just, like, I don't know, because it's like, yeah, it's like a show and it's like an autobiography and everything, but like, it was kind of like a concert too, you know, in a lot of ways. Like, it's not your like traditional theater, and I think that's what was so cool about it, because at the same time it was, you know, like, talk to me about just like how fun it was and how different it is compared to a show like Wicked and like Neverland and Jekyll and Hyde and all of that.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was fun. It was also, I think, you know, one of like the showiest shows I've done,
like,
just
flashiest.
With like, flashiest, that's the right word, flashiest, because it's Cher and like the Bob Mackie costumes, and
of course,
and getting to work with Bob Mackie, he is such a dream. Oh my god, it's so like, oh god, that was such a gift, so cool. And like, just the appreciation of like, I love how all of a sudden a sibilant S of like, I'm like, appreciation. I don't know why I keep.
You got it though. You got it.
A few times.
Yeah.
But like the appreciation of clothing and just fully, because it's Cher, like the female body and like what clothing, how it can like hide and highlight things and draw attention, and just his love of just sparkle and glam and all of that, and just feeling what it's like to wear dresses that are made out of very specific beading, and they have literally a weight to them that you don't find in, you know, things that you buy at like Macy's or Target.
Right.
So it was just, it was a very flashy show, which was difficult because it felt like there was presentational stuff, but then because it was also still a play, or telling someone's, the, you know, behind the scenes of someone's life and a very complicated person who has had a lot of ups and downs and hardships, also trying to then be vulnerable and emotional and honest and all of that. So it was interesting figuring out how to go between those two things. But the key to that was, it was very, that's very Cher. So it actually helped, like when you have to switch it on and just be, you know, glamour push Cher and like a barely there outfit and sparkles and like deliver like all these, you know, belt your face off and be a rock goddess, and then switch to being like at home, a mom having a fight with her husband and those sort of things. So it was interesting trying to do that. And I had a lot of fun. It was a journey, and there were difficult times, but I look back on it and I really loved it. And I loved my character. I loved all my cast. And it was also because of the Cher show, sharing the role with two other people. We had a very, very strong, actually four other people, because Dee Rossioli, our standby for Star and Lady, she was there for all of, anytime it was like a Cher specific rehearsal or a Cher works session with like our vocal coach or all of that. Dee was always there. So there were four of us. So we really created like a sisterhood bond that was,
that's awesome.
Also really lovely. Made it into, things were a little heightened and emotional just because, you know, we are female actors and we can tend to be emotional, especially when we're stressed and exhausted.
Sure.
But it just made things feel a little extra heightened and a little extra meaningful because we were all going through it together and really trying to be there and supportive for each other. And while trying to portray this huge iconic superstar that is, as Cher is, she also sort of has her own world going on. So sometimes it felt like we were almost competing with her rather than trying to pay homage to her, because it just, her presence is just so there. And she was also doing her own tour, her concert tours and all of that. And so sometimes it felt like it was, okay, the Cher show versus Cher herself.
Right.
Which was tricky to navigate.
Yeah. Fascinating. It's crazy. I don't know, like, just the, like, even with, like, MJ, like, obviously, like, he's not alive and everything, but, like, now that that's on Broadway, you know, like, all of these, like, biographical, like, you know, shows, I feel like, are just so tricky. And, like, I mean, all the shows, I guess all shows on Broadway are, like, based on people, you know, and based on stories and everything like that. But, like, you know, when it's someone that's just so prevalent and is such a iconic and cultural, like, figure, you know, like, it's just, I can't imagine how tricky it is. But, like, it's done in such a legitimate way, in such a beautiful way, in such a powerful way that, like, it's successful, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, y'all made it to Broadway and you guys, like, killed it, you know, like,
oh,
and it was so cool. Yeah. And like, honestly, like, a lot of people are saying, like, and it may be the case, like, Six is like leading the way for Broadway, like, you know, like, they're like the female led and everything like that, but like, you guys kind of started that too, where you know, you're three like incredibly talented women like leading the way on Broadway and like sharing like a female story, you know, like, and that I feel like y'all were the first like stepping ground for that. So you guys. And then
we had Tina, you know, Tina like basically came in right, so like kind of continues that like this huge iconic just a badass goddess, like powerhouse lady, and telling that story. And yeah, it is exciting. I know I haven't seen six yet because I just, whatever. Life,
oh my God.
Life, and then also now it's like one of the hottest tickets. So I was like, I missed my window to see it.
So good.
I know, but it's so interesting. It is so interesting that the show is as huge a hit as it is. Not that it wouldn't be, but I know, like, from its origins, the fact that it is where it's at also means that the audiences are craving that sort of thing. And like you were saying, like, strong women telling strong stories. And it's also like real cool, fun, just music, just
totally
belting and singing and dancing for the heavens.
Absolutely. Well, Teal, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but this has been a blast, seriously, in catching up on all the things and talking about your career, because we really haven't had a conversation like this before.
I know.
So I appreciate you coming on here and chatting with me.
I know. Why would you want to have, you were little doing your own thing, living your...
I totally, like, just did not get it when I was younger. I was just like, what is happening? I'm working with, like, my best friend. Like, you know, like, it's just like, they're just a person. And, like, we still are, but, like, I didn't realize, like, I didn't even watch Glee. Like, my brother was like, oh my God, Matthew Morrison. And I was like, cool. Like, you know, like, I was so like blinded to that because, like, I was so young. So it's like cool to, like, now revisit that and be able to, like, oh, like, I'm curious to see how this happened and how this worked. And, like, being able to, like, learn and sponge more things. It's fascinating. So
I think that's awesome. Oh my gosh. Of course. Yeah. I think it's lovely. And yeah. And you were such, oh my gosh, you were such a joy. I remember when you joined the company, especially because Colin knew you. And he's like, oh, he's such a dream. And we were just like, oh, hey. Hey, you were such a positive, lovely little light popping all around the theater.
Stop.
I mean, all you guys were like, it's, I can't, now I want to do a whole nother conversation with you. And I want to know about you. And I want to know what it's like being that young and having to be in a Broadway show, because Lord, I was not ready to be on Broadway until I was on Broadway, which was when I was in my 20s. So I needed a few decades to figure out who I am and what I wanted to do.
Yeah, for sure. But it's a whole thing, and to be doing it with, like, going to school and all of that, and, you know, doing, you know, we're all in this industry, so, like, we do, like, multiple things at once, you know. It's not like we're just doing the show, so, like, all of that stuff just factored in. Like, I look back on it and I'm just like, what was I, like, thinking? But
I know
we survived, we're here, and we're doing it.
Sure are.
So yeah. And, like, now we can look back and just be like, that's so cool. Like, good for us, you know?
Good for us.
Yeah. I know. Like, we are pretty cool. Like, we are okay, you know? People do like us. There are people in the world that, like, yeah, they're cool. They're, like, a good person. It's crazy. Especially, like, in a time where, especially during the pandemic, where it's like, everyone sucks. Everyone's bad.
Yeah.
No one can stay inside. Our president's a mess. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, there's all these things. And, like, now to look back, it's like, yeah, no, the world will be okay.
Yeah, we got enough good-hearted, well-intentioned people in the world. We just need them to be in places of power to make decisions.
Right.
That's another conversation.
We'll tune in for part three. No, just
kidding. I know, right?
thank you so much. I really just can't thank you enough. It was so good to see you and talk to you again. So thank you for coming on here.
Oh my gosh, it was so fun.
Yeah, and you have so much to take a bow for. So thanks for doing it on the podcast today.
Taking the bow.
Yeah. Take a bow to your Wicks. Oh my God. Just everything, just reminiscing the whole Finding Neverland moments and kind of talking about, you know, Cher and working with her and how she was able to, like, kind of reveal more of herself. Like, that, all of that stuff was so fascinating. She brought so many fun things to the table, talking about Jekyll and Hyde, Wicked, all of the fun stuff. I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode, because she's one of the greatest people I know. She was so fun to talk to and reconnect with. So thank you again, Teal Wicks, for coming on the podcast, sharing some stories, and kind of catching up. And as always, thank you all for listening. I usually do a couple more segments, but we have been here long enough today, and I appreciate you for sticking around to the end. So I'm just going to wrap it up by saying, as always, follow us on social media for more exclusive content, whether it's Instagram or it's TikTok, or you can check us out on Patreon. Our social media on TikTok and Instagram is at Take About Podcast. Patreon is patreon.com/TAB. And you can check us out because we are hosting a very special live event for Take About. We are going to be doing this whole thing, this whole podcast thing. We're going to be doing it live, and we're going to be doing it at the Green Room 42 on April 18th at 9:30. And I have some incredible special guests coming that I'm not going to announce this week, and it's killing me that I can't announce it yet. But I will hopefully be announcing it next week on next week's episode, because time is ticking, but I can assure you that we have some incredible guests, and they've actually all already been featured on the podcast. So really, it's kind of like a reminiscing since the last time we've talked on the podcast to talk about the incredible things that they've been up to since talking to me on the podcast, and kind of also paying a tribute and saying thank you for all that they've done for the podcast and just coming on and all of that and celebrating with them. So once again, thank you all for listening. If you're interested in that live show, check us out. It's on the Green Room 42 website, or you can go to the link in our bios in our social media to buy your tickets today. All the tickets are super cheap. They are less than a rush ticket to a Broadway show. I promise you it's going to be a fun night. We have so many fun things planned for you. It's going to be super interactive. So come check us out. It's at the Green Room 42. Once again, links are in the bio, or you can go to the Green Room 42 website and just search Take a Bow. Either one will work. Come check us out. And each ticket comes with a $10 food and beverage voucher. So you'll have a kind of like a gift card for like your drink or your food or whatever you want. And you don't even have to get that if you don't want to. But the option's there. So once again, thank you all for listening. I hope you will come check us out, and appreciate you all staying till the end. And if you can't make it to the live show and you are wanting to come see, check out what this is and kind of participate in the fun night that we have planned, we are offering live streaming tickets. So you can go check those out. You have to have access, and you have to buy a ticket to get the access to the live stream link. That is also on the Green Room's wonderful website that they have for us, where you can buy your tickets. So I hope to see you all next week, because we have yet another exciting episode with a very exciting guest. So thank you all for tuning in, and see you next week. Bye, everyone. Have a great week. For this episode's Curtain Call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dory Berenstein, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take a bow is Tessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at Take a Bow Podcast. Take a Bow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.